Hi, I'm your host, Bella Page, and welcome to the Post-Concussion Podcast, all about life after experiencing a concussion. Help us make the invisible injury become visible. The Post-Concussion Podcast is strictly an information podcast about concussions and post-concussion syndrome. It does not provide nor substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or another qualified health provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition. Never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you have heard on this podcast. The opinions expressed in this podcast are simply intended to spark discussion about concussions and post-concussion syndrome. Welcome to today's episode of the Post-Concussion Podcast with myself, Bella Page, and today's guest, Curtis Anderson. Curtis suffered a traumatic brain injury in 2002 while bull riding at the Ponoka Stampede. After being put in a medically induced coma, he never gave up hope as he worked to regain his physical mobility. He spent a week short of a year in therapy, learning how to walk, talk, regain the use of his left arm, and basic life skills. Still making progress in his recovery, his new mission in life is to instill hope and provide inspiration for others. Recovering from a life-altering event is possible. Welcome to the show, Curtis.
Thank you, Bill, and thank you for having me on.
So to start, do you want to tell everyone a bit about the day of your injury?
Well, it was June 27th, 2002. I was at the Ponoka Stampede, and I lost my balance, and my head smashed the bull's head twice. And, you know, I was rushed to the U of A hospital, and I spent 3 weeks in a drug-induced coma. But, Bella, like 2 weeks before my accident, I had a severe concussion. So my brain was already injured to a certain degree, and the two hits I took at Ponoka took it over the edge. So I'm living proof what can happen when you go back too soon without letting your brain heal from the first concussion. And your brain is most susceptible in the first 2 weeks.
Yeah, for sure it is. I also ignored a lot of rules with the whole concussion thing. It was also, well, when you got your injury, it wasn't so pushed like it is today to take that break. And even today, it isn't pushed enough.
No, like Bella, when I got hurt, there's only two guys in Western Canada that wore helmets while riding. And now there's probably over 95%. And, you know, like you said, people are a lot more aware of concussions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a huge difference for sure. And that helmet is essential, especially when you think of bull riding. Wow. Amazing how it... Yeah. So much time for changes like that to occur. Do you remember anything about the day of your injury, or when do you start remembering things?
The last thing that I remember was setting my rope on the bull. And the next thing that I remember was the ambulance ride from the university over to the Glen Rose. And that was 3 weeks later after I came out of that drug-induced coma.
Okay, yeah. Then you had woken up and then you went into rehab. So do you want to share the steps of how that rehab process went in the first year and then after that?
When I first started, it took two nurses to get me out of bed, and they would push my chair to therapy. And in physiotherapy, the therapist walked alongside me for an hour a day, teaching me how to walk step by step. And it would be your cane, left foot, and then right, and there would be an assistant walking behind me with a chair so I could take a break once in a while. And with my left arm, one of the first things they got me to do was toss beanbags from the edge of a table to a pail while trying to keep my balance. And with speech, well, for the first couple of weeks, I wrote everything down in a scribbler to communicate. But then I started pronouncing vowels and putting vowels into words and words into sentences.
Yeah, that's amazing. It's the amount of therapy that goes into the rehab after a brain injury, people don't always realize it's, and the little steps matter. Those little, the day you get to take a few more steps than the day before, and then that's how you get better and being able to keep pushing through every single day because it's different for everybody.
And I mean, for the first 13 years, I kept a list of things I could do with my left arm or two arms. And it took me 10 years before I could touch each finger to my thumb on my left hand. And, you know, like that would take average Joe 3 seconds or a few seconds anyways.
For sure. It's amazing. Even 10 years, like it's great to hear how the progress continues. I know a lot of people, they get suffer a brain injury or stroke related type trauma. And after that, it seems like you'll never improve more because it slows down. Did you find your progression slowed a lot after a certain point?
Like, I guess that's one thing is that first year, I mean, it's just like snowball effect. So much is happening, but I've been, I guess, fortunate that my recovery is, you know, it's kept going. And that's what the true test of any recovery is when you go home and you're no longer on the schedule. I mean, you don't have to be at physio at 10 or occupational at 11. And like, you just have to take it upon yourself how much time dedication you're going to put into it. And I mean, everyone's recovery is different. So
yeah, no, it's really important. It's really hard to motivate yourself. I find people are experiencing that right now. While we're recording, we're in the middle of COVID lockdown again, where I am, and you have to get yourself up to go to work or get yourself up to do your schoolwork. And if you don't have that class to go to or that office to go to, even little things like that are hard, let alone therapy that you have to put on yourself if you want to improve. So it's really impressive that you kept going.
And I live on near a farm, and like you're always, I guess, busy and active. And that's something, I guess, I always had something to do. So you're keeping active.
Yeah, it's important. It's important for everybody. So a lot of the time when you do brain injury recovery, a lot of the time in the news articles and the stats, as you were talking, it was about how after 2 years, everything slows down and you're done. So what is your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, one, the stat they say is after 2 years, that's as good as you're going to get. Well, 2 years, you're just getting started. And the biggest thing with recovery is you will keep getting better as long as you want to. Yeah. And that's the bottom line.
For sure. I really like that. And it does take a lot of time to get better. 2 years is not enough, even for a non-traumatic brain injury. And just like a concussion, which is still a very severe injury, it takes a lot more than 2 years for everything to go back to whatever new normal.
It took 10 years for things to really get going with my left arm. Mm-hmm. Up until then, it was pretty slow, but it seemed like the 10-year mark, things took off.
Well, that's amazing. Well, thank you for sharing. So as we talked earlier before the recording, we mentioned that your disability, you had access issues in certain areas like stairways, having a railing on one side, you would have to go up and down backwards. So do you have any recommendations for places to improve their accessibility or what others who have disabilities should try to just accept it or how they should handle those types of situations?
Well, I really recommend any public building to have a railing on each side of the stairs, because it was 8 years before I could use that left railing again. And like you said, a lot of the times I went down the stairs backwards just so I could hang on to the railing. And if there was no railing, I'd be stuck at the top and bottom if there wasn't someone to go up and down with me. And I mean, not only for just survivors, but, you know, say the elderly, it's very safe to have a railing on each side. For survivors that, you know, get in that situation, don't be scared to ask anyone for help, because people will help you up and down the stairs, no problem. And if you are, there's no one there, take your time. If you're going to try to do it yourself, just take your going up is a lot easier than coming down.
Asking for help, that's huge. It's really hard to ask for help. I find anybody to that step of asking for help with a lot of vulnerability and admitting that maybe you need that help with something. How did you find that? Were you really comfortable with asking for help at the beginning, or did you have to take your time to get there?
Well, I guess there's a couple steps. You know, right in the beginning, you have to ask for help. But then, you know, when you're doing stuff, you know, when people are always trying to do it for you, you know, it's one thing as a survivor, you could take too much help. You got to just try to do it yourself, because if you don't try, you won't get better. 9 times out of 10, you're going to be alone anyway, so you better do it while there's someone there. And I mean, certain situations are different, but yeah, there's definitely a fine line where I remember one time someone kept pushing. I basically said if I wanted your help, I'd ask for it.
Yeah, no, that's a good... Sometimes we don't want that help. And that's totally fine, too, if you want to try to do things on your own. Or, like you said, if you don't try, how will you ever know? And that is a huge thing as well. If you don't try it out, then it's just going to be a mystery, and then you might overthink about it. So it's worth the shot, even if it might go wrong. One of the biggest parts of recovery, which is more... it's more important to a lot of people than the physical effects that also happen, is the learning how to speak. So relearning how to speak, a lot of people here probably don't know the process, but it's very long and it's difficult. And it starts with, from making vowel sounds to short words to full words to sentences. And it takes a lot of time to learn all those tools again, and also learning how to use the tools alone when you're out of therapy would be a whole nother job. So when speaking with an individual who may take a moment to bring up a word or have a bit of trouble pronouncing it, what do you think the best action is as a friend?
Give them as much time as they need and don't try to finish their sentence. Like just give them time, and eventually, you know, they're going to say it. It's just, well, that's one thing, I guess, whether you're doing something or you're trying to get a word. As a survivor, there's so much satisfaction and being proud of being able to do something for the first time. It's hard to explain, but it's a very proud feeling when you're able, as a survivor, do something for the first time you couldn't do since the accident.
Yeah, I love that. It's great advice to give someone the chance, right? We don't want to speak for other people. And even if it does take them an extra minute, what's the rush, right?
Yeah, and Bella, in your recovery, did you ever have people try to speak for you? Or say there's someone behind the counter and they're asking the question and they don't look at you to answer the question, they can look at the person beside you?
I luckily didn't have a lot of that, other than when my friends would more just laugh at the point, or they wouldn't really realize when I couldn't come up with the word. It was more, I couldn't think of it, and my brain would go blank about what we were speaking with immediately. We'd be in the middle of a conversation, I just go, whoa, like it's all gone. What are we talking about? But no, I luckily didn't have that. But that's a huge issue as well when people address someone else. Like a lot of the time I had them address my parents instead, but I was the one going through it. And I understood it's good to get my parents' opinion, as they might see things that I'm not realizing. But you should also be addressing me as the patient, because I'm the one living with this.
I remember one time when I got home and I was with the worker, we went to a swimming pool in the nearby, and there was a lady behind the counter, you know, we're going to set up a schedule. And she asked my worker what hours I wanted to go. Like, she figured I couldn't answer the question. And I remember when I talked to my worker later, I said, well, you know, I said, that bugged me. I said, I'm full well capable of answering my own answers.
Yeah, for sure. So everyone, you can find Curtis on Instagram at CurtisAnderson6 and find a lot of his motivational poems on there. And you can also find the link in today's show notes. But with that, we're going to take a break, but make sure you stay tuned to hear how and what Curtis is up to today. Want to create awareness for concussions? Want to support our podcast and website? Buy awareness clothing today on postconcussioninc.com and get 10% off using Listen In. That's LISTENIN. And be sure to tag Post Concussion Inc. in your photos. We'd love to see them. Welcome back to the Post Concussion Podcast with myself, Bella Page, and today's guest, Curtis Anderson. So we're going to get back into it with Curtis. And to start, because Curtis's accident was bull riding, I'm really curious what your current opinion is on bull riding.
Oh, I still like bull riding quite a bit. And there's like at bull riding events here in Alberta, I've spoke at lots of them, and then I get to share my message with the crowd. But then I talk to the guys one-on-one and let them know, like, I'm living proof the severity of repeated concussions, and just letting guys know not to go back too soon and just take your time, because it's better to take a few more weeks off than keep going back too soon and maybe one day you don't come back in any sport.
Yeah, exactly. I'm the same way. I'm really passionate about show jumping. Still think it's an amazing sport. I wish I knew and listened more to my body about taking that break. I think that's great that you're going back to those events and educating the community about how you need to take that break, because you can end up like, I can't ride a horse right now. I need the break permanently now, at least for a few years. Hopefully that's it. But I didn't do that. I didn't take the few weeks off or the few months that would have allowed me to continue. And it's really important that we make that aware to athletes to take that break so that you can continue other than pushing through it and ignoring those symptoms, because a lot of the time it ends up a lot worse. So yourself, where are you at today? Are you able to be active?
Yeah, you know, like in, say, in the winter times, I go skating quite a bit, and I curl on a couple of Bonspiels, and then I started to bike ride a while ago, and I wanted to ride across Canada on my stationary bike, and I just kept track of the miles I've gone on my calendar, and I started out in Vancouver, and I've gone 2,126 0.9 miles in 82 days. So I'm on the east side of Toronto, about 20 miles. So it's the best I did was 19.1 miles in an hour. And riding a stationary bike, the oxygen gets deeper into your brain. So you create 2 to 3 times the amount of basically new brain cells. So it's very good. And it helps with brain function and repair. So as survivors, it's a good exercise.
That's amazing. I don't bike very well, so that's awesome. I have old knee injuries from riding horses, so it doesn't go the best, but I was trying to figure out where you were. So that's really far. That's awesome. And it's great. It's a good goal to set yourself going every day, right? While you hop on that bike. So how does that work? How well is your function in your left arm now then for biking?
Oh, well, Belle, it's just a stationary bike, so I just do it in my porch.
Yeah, but do you have to hold on, or do you have anything set up on it differently?
Actually, I'm pretty lucky. I can ride the bike now with no handlebars and my eyes closed to challenge my balance that much more.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. I had someone the other day, we did a recording, and he has a special whole system set up on his bike to make it a little easier for him to bike, which is amazing because there's things like that that exist. And I think it's important for people to reach out and get them when they need them. Do you have any advice for young survivors whose injuries were a similar severity or less?
Go to all your therapies and listen to your body. If you're tired, you're tired. And your brain will tell you, and you need to listen. And the best medicine is rest and water. The bottom line is you don't get better sitting on the couch. To keep challenging yourself and to try your hardest every day, you know. I wrote an anagram for the word grit, and it's getting a chance to recovery. Recovery is in your own hands. And take one day at a time and make each day count.
That's amazing. I like it. That's a really good way to put it. I think you have had so much to say, and everything that you have said has been so insightful and inspiring to a lot of survivors out there. Is there anything else you would like to add before ending today's episode?
Well, determination, dedication, try, grit, courage, confidence, commitment, resilience, tenacity, perseverance, optimism, strength, and the most important, patience, is a choice until it is the only choice that you have, And us, all the survivors out there, I mean, that's the only choice we have. And hope everyone a good recovery and to keep fighting.
Yeah, well, thank you. Thank you so much, Curtis, for joining us today and sharing a bit of your story and instilling hope in our listeners. Has your life been affected by concussions? Join our podcast by getting in touch. Thank you so much for listening to the Post Concussion Podcast, and be sure to help us educate the world about the reality of concussions by giving us a share. And to learn more, don't forget to subscribe.